protesters are set ablaze in Paris by angry demonstrators protesting against police brutality and a proposed security bill that they say will violate civil liberties. Thousands of protesters in the Armenian capital renewed their demand for the resignation of Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan over a controversial peace agreement with Azerbaijan. And Palestinian mourners hold a funeral in the occupied West Bank for a 15-year-old boy who was shot dead by an Israeli soldier on Friday. And welcome to World News. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story takes us to France this hour, where police in the capital, Paris, have clashed with protesters angry at police brutality and a new security bill. Protesters vandalized buildings and set fire to cars. A similar rally took place in a northern city. Now, demonstrators want the French government to withdraw the security bill that curbs rights to circulate images of police officers. They say the bill would limit freedom and allow police brutality to go undiscovered and unpunished. Public anger has intensified after footage circulated online last month showing police beating a black man. Now, the National Assembly has passed a bill and it's now awaiting Senate approval. President Emmanuel Macron's ruling party has said it would rewrite part of the bill. Chris Dahan in Paris says the proposed security law is dangerous because it allows for broad interpretations to be implemented.
Because nobody understands very well the law. I mean, you can interpret it as you want, and the government adds one word to diminish the effect, or they say if you have the intent to publish pictures of police officers, or you have the intention, a bad intention to publish something so you can be punished. So it's very unclear, this law, and that's why it's also a dangerous law. Because as it's unclear, the interpretation of the law, you can interpret it on a bad way. So and also journalists and photographers and video journalists, they are already self-censoring themselves because they are thinking if we film police officers, we might be sanctioned. So this law is absolutely unnecessary. Most media associations, they say that if there is incitement to attack the physical integrity of police officers or any person in France, there are existing laws to use to halt this kind of practice. So it's a totally unnecessary law, and most of the protesters, they want to cancel this law, to abolish this law.
The British Prime Minister and the European Commission President are set to hold talks in an effort to break a stalemate in post-Brexit trade negotiations. Boris Johnson and Ursula von der Leyen are expected to hold their phone call later in the day. On Friday, British and EU negotiators paused trade talks to call in their leaders. Now, they cited what they call significant divergences. There has been little progress between the two sides despite months of talks. The three outstanding issues are fisheries, fair competition, and dispute resolution. Britain left the European Union at the end of January but remains under EU trading rules. Well, the two sides must reach a deal before the Brexit transition period ends on December the 31st. Earlier, we were joined by Jerome Hughes in Brussels, and he said the next few days are crucial if the UK and the EU want to avoid business on World Trade Organization terms.
You know, we've had a lot of deadlines that have come and gone during this entire process, but I think this weekend and certainly the coming days really shows us that time is running out, and so that if we don't get an agreement in these coming days, I think that's very significant, and there is a likelihood that both sides will go back to World Trade Organization trading terms if they don't get a deal, and there's all sorts of implications. But I think this phone call today between Boris Johnson and Ursula von der Leyen, to all intents and purposes, it's effectively a call, I think, between Boris Johnson and Angela Merkel, because, of course, Germany is the powerhouse in the EU. Ursula von der Leyen and Angela Merkel would be very close as well. And so Von der Leyen would be getting certainly her negotiating points from Merkel. But these big issues, I mean, we talk about the various issues. Fishing rights has to be a huge one, because the European Union is insisting that it has to have access to UK fishing waters, but the UK doesn't want that. And so, you know, it's hard to see how they're going to get over this hurdle. There's also the issue of when we talk about state aid, you know, the EU doesn't want the UK being able to give government funding to various firms and so on, which would create unfair competition between the UK and the EU in the event that they do have a trade deal. So there has to be a level playing field in that regard. And then in terms of settling disputes, how are disputes settled? Does it go to the EU Court of Justice or whatever?
Russia has begun its mass coronavirus vaccination using the homegrown vaccine Sputnik V. Health officials say they have opened 70 vaccination clinics in the capital, Moscow, the hotspot of infections in the country. The coronavirus task force says the vaccine will be delivered first to the groups at risk of becoming infected, including medical workers, teachers, and social workers. Now, the vaccine is administered in two injections, with the second dosage expected to be given 21 days after the first. Developers of Sputnik V say it is 95% effective and causes no major side effects. However, the fast process of its development has raised concerns about its safety. Russia has so far registered more than 2.4 million infections, which is the fourth highest in the world. Well, as the coronavirus is affecting many people on a daily basis in Iran, blood transfusion can save lives and improve health. Providing safe and adequate blood is an integral part of every country's national healthcare policy. Human Abadi brings us more.
The Islamic Republic of Iran currently has the highest blood donation rate in the Eastern Mediterranean region. And out of almost 10 million donation units in this region, over 2 million is by the Iranians. These days, a campaign is launched in Tehran to collect blood from athletes to encourage other people to donate their blood. The campaign is being promoted by Sports Society of Basij in collaboration with the country's blood transfusion organization.
We have organized this event to give the opportunity to athletes and other people to donate their blood to improve the level of blood banks in the country.
Famous sportsmen also took part to convince ordinary people to be part of the move as well.
I am here today to donate my blood because it's a must for everyone to help the patients. Our country needs our blood, as the bank reservoirs are running low. I call on my fellow countrymen to come and help and save lives.
I want to be part of this campaign to do the least I can do for those who need blood. This can also improve the health in our country. As the body of athletes is strong, their blood is of a better quality. I ask all the athletes to show up and assist.
Studies showed that the plasma taken from the recovered people can be used in treating the coronavirus patients.
While blood donation in many countries still depends on replacement or paid donors, Iran is the first country in the region that has enjoyed voluntary blood donation by 100% since 2007. Human Abadi, Tehran.
A court in the city of Louisville, Kentucky, has charged an African-American man with assaulting federal task force officers during a rally against police brutality back in September. John Fitzgerald Johnson is the head of a black militia group. The court says he resisted a group of officers after he pointed his rifle at them in Louisville. Those officers were on the roof of the Jefferson County Grand Jury building, watching over anti-racism protesters. The demonstrators were among a crowd protesting against the police's killing of African-American Breonna Taylor. The allegations come as far-right militia groups have been accused of using violence during anti-racism rallies. Those groups include the Proud Boys, who support President Donald Trump's stance on race, but no criminal action has been taken against them so far. Well, I'd like to welcome two guests to this part of the program discussing the situation, Ms. Elena Porter, international human rights specialist and activist out of Atlanta, Georgia, and Cecile Johnson from the Pendle Center for Human Rights and Self-Determination out of Columbia, South Carolina. Welcome, both of you, to the program. Well, let me start off with Elena. Tell me about this particular case and the information that you had. It appears quite odd that this situation, this demonstration they're talking about, took place in September, and it took 3 months for authorities to arrest him when they said that he was pointing his weapon at them. So tell me about that side of things, Elena, please.
Well, I have attended several of, at least two of the formations and the protests and the rallies, and I have been involved in the formations. And Grandmaster Jay, John Fitzgerald Johnson, he respects the law, and all of the members, he expects us to abide by the law during the formations and outside of the formations. We're supposed to carry ourselves in high character, abide by all of the rules and regulations, and also respect law enforcement. Grandmaster Jay, before he goes to or sets up any formation, he contacts all of the powers that be, all of the people who are in charge of the certifications for the permits, people who are in charge of law enforcement. It's not a situation where he's just going willy-nilly into these areas, occupying these areas, using force. He's gotten a lot of bad publicity concerning the way that he handles things, and it's not true at all. He's very professional on the way and the manner that he carries himself and that he carries the militia. He makes sure that all of the members abide by the rules and regulations concerning militias in the Second Amendment to the Constitution, and as well as local state and county law.
Okay. Well, Cecile, your take on this. I mean, if we go back in history and we look at, for example, in the 60s, 70s, and what happened to various civil rights groups or individuals who were effective for Black Americans, or we look at what happened to the Black Panthers, is history basically repeating itself? Do we have two set of laws? We have the white militia. We heard U.S. President Donald Trump supporting them and telling them to stand by. And then we have black militia saying they're going to defend themselves because they see more and more what they call racists arming themselves and that they need to protect themselves. And now we see these charges being put against the leader of that group. Your take.
Yeah, this is just COINTELPRO happening again, right? COINTELLIGENCE. And when you look at the history of what has happened, whenever you have a leader who is able to mobilize the people, this is what happens, right? They either try to arrest you, they try to shoot you, they try to smear your name. They use the same tactics all the time, so I don't understand why we're not, why we're surprised, right? So if it took them 3 months to look at a video to figure out what they thought was a threat, then obviously the time that it happened wasn't a threat, right? Because if it was a threat, they would have taken action. So I just see this as intimidation.
Okay.
And response to the fact that he's been out speaking about some of the actions that we have taken as we filed, you know, a declaration of self-determination.
Okay, well, stay with me. Stay with me on that. I want to get Elena on this because you talked about self-determination. And Elena, mm-hmm. I want to look at what your organization and what you see is key for Black Americans at this point in time. We have seen, whether it's Democrats in office or Republicans in office, we still have seen, for example, Black men being killed by police and discrimination still taking place in the United States. Mm-hmm. So what is key in your perspective to change the status quo?
What is key, Sister Marcy, is that now is the time for us to be released. We have been held captive in the United States legally and politically since 1865. We are a nation within a nation. The relationship that we have with the United States government is a parasitical relationship, and we are colonized. The 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution forcefully annexes us to the polity without our consent. There was no plebiscite vote. After 1865, our ancestors had a right to return to Africa. Those who wanted to expatriate back to Africa, we had a right to set up our own government here, or we had a right to integrate. But the relationship is forced because we didn't agree to it. There was no plebiscite vote, and it's still forced as far as I'm concerned. So in order for us to remove ourselves from the parasitical relationship, we must assert our international human rights to self-determination. We have a right to self-govern. We have a right to self-policing. Under the Decolonization Conventions and under the 1949 Geneva Convention and its additional protocols concerning internal colonies like ourselves, we have rights that we have yet to assert.
Okay.
And the only way to close these inequality gaps is to self-govern. We have an economy. We circulate $1.2 trillion through the American system, but we don't control it. We have property rights. We have not asserted them because we have puppet leadership in high places that continues to use the colorblind ideology to disguise the fact that we have a right to self-determination, a right to immediate reparations, and a right to self-govern, and the right to self-police.
Okay, stay with me, Lena. What's the seal? You're also involved in this right to self-determination. And how are you proposing that this takes place? What has to happen to get Black America there to that reality of self-determination?
Under the Montevideo Convention, there are four steps to forming a nation, and the first one is a people, the second is a place, so you take out your red marker and decide where we are, and we tend to congregate in certain areas, a government, and a recognition. So we have then met three of those where we have the people, the place, and recognition, and what needs to happen is an interim government. But for you to do that, we need to have a plebiscite vote. So the first thing we did was we held a declaration of self-determination, and that was filed, that was on October 1st, 2017, and that was filed with the UN Human Rights Commission in March of 2018, and it was accepted. And so we are known officially as the African descendant nation, but we are also Afro-descendant nation under the UN, so they're one and the same. So now what we need is recognition. We have sent in a request in 2018 to the Decolonization Committee, requesting that we be added to that list. Because part of the problem is the fact that the world doesn't see us as a colonized people. They think we're happy. Do we look happy to you folks? Come on now. We're not happy at all. So therefore, we need to be added to that decolonization list. That decolonization list is the list that people were put on or countries were put on, and then they then had official independence.
Okay.
Now, we're not asking for independence. We're asking for a free association, which is an agreement with the United States so that within the United States, in areas that we are majority, we control those areas. Because obviously, with all the crimes against us, if we control those areas and controlled ourselves, we could decrease that violence against us.
Okay, and on that note, I appreciate both of you being with us. Elena Porter, international human rights specialist and activist out of Atlanta, Georgia. Cecile Johnson from the Pendos Center for Human Rights and Self-Determination out of Columbia, South Carolina. And with that, that brings us to the end of this World News Edition. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. sparked by a new bill that would make publishing photos of police illegal, and a viral video soon after that shows French police brutally beating a black man, it appears that France may be headed for its own George Floyd moment, says Alan McLeod, writer in an article published under the heading, France's new security law may have just sparked a George Floyd moment. Stay tuned for the details, please. Award-winning Syrian photographer Amir Al-Halbi lies dazed on the ground. His head is heavily bruised and bandaged. Blood covers his face, arms, and much of his body. Lengths of cotton wool have been stuffed up his broken nose, giving him an almost comical appearance. Al-Halbi has been badly beaten by French police. But this is Paris, where he was covering ironically huge nationwide protest against police brutality this weekend. Perhaps even more concerning is that new laws pushed through by the government of Emmanuel Macron and passed by France's National Assembly, akin to the U.S. House of Representatives, mean that sharing images of Al-Halbi or other victims of police brutality might soon be considered illegal. Article 24 of the France's new national security bill, which now only needs to be ratified by the Senate, specifically outlaws the publishing and dissemination of images of police that undermine their physical or psychological integrity, and is punishable with a fine of up to 45,000 euros and up to 1 year in jail. The bill specifically states that filming police in such a manner would be against the law, but questions have been raised about how liberally authorities would interpret a nebulous language of the new edict is interpreted. Media unions and human rights groups warn that it could prevent journalists from documenting police abuses. The National Assembly's decision to approve the law last week sparked large protests in many major cities around France, including Bordeaux, Lille, Montpellier, and Nantes. However, an incident caught on camera recently threw large amounts of fuel on the fire of resentment, drastically increasing the demonstration size and intensity. Images from mobile phones and closed-circuit television showed an unprovoked police attack on a young black music producer at his place of work. A group of four officers can be seen chasing after Michel Zecler, following him from outside into his studio, where they kick, punch, and beat him with truncheons. Zecler also alleges they shouted racial abuse while they assailed him. Before the videos went viral on social media, the officers testified that Zecler had in fact attacked them and was resisting arrest. The officers have now been charged with deliberate violence and with falsifying statements. Two of the Gang of Four, including a 44-year-old senior officer with a rank of brigadier, remain in custody while two others have been released. The viral images provoked a storm of condemnation across France this weekend and propelled as many as 500,000 people into the streets with demonstrations in dozens of cities. Protesters marched through the streets, setting light to cars, damaging buildings, and clashing with police, of whom a reported 98 were injured nationwide. Many of Paris' iconic boulevards resembled a war zone, as thousands of demonstrators pitched battle with lines of police in riot gear. President Macron said he was very shocked by the footage of the police attack on Zecler, yet continues to be a driving force behind new security law, under which many have noted that the images might never have come to light, given as they essentially identify the Parisian officers and clearly undermine their integrity or authority. Without the footage, it is possible that Zecler would have been facing prosecution himself. Although the bill and the protests against it are dominating French politics, the story has been covered sparsely in the American corporate press, with no coverage whatsoever in MSNBC, CBS News, or CNBC. Fox News, meanwhile, reprinted one Associated Press article featuring an egregious, uncorrected error in its sub headline, asserting that protesters were shooting tear gas at themselves. While foreign desks have been seriously cut in recent years, huge demonstrations in central Paris should not have been too difficult to cover. Lebanese political commentator Sarah Abdullah suggested that if the rallies had been happening in countries antagonistic to the United States, they would have been front page news. The U.S. Secretary of State is yet to comment on the events in France, suggesting that they're not at the front and center of his thoughts. President Macron came to power in 2017, winning in the final round of the election against far-right challenger Marine Le Pen. A strong believer in neoliberalism and an admirer of former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, he has insisted that France must not merely be reformed, but transformed, and has attempted to radically alter the shape of French society, away from a social democratic model to one more resembling the United States of America. Almost immediately after gaining the presidency, however, his average approval rating tumbled and has not risen above 40% since. Indeed, the 42-year-old former investment banker has faced almost constant resistance to his agenda from the general public. His attempts to increase the cost of fuel in 2018 sparked the Yellow Vest movement across France. Meanwhile, his plans to raise the age of retirement and reform France's pension system was met with month-long general strike that paralyzed France last winter. Despite losing over 50,000 people to the coronavirus pandemic, he has seen his popularity increase this year due to the government's financial response to the virus, which included aid to small businesses and paying employees to stay home. Despite this, it appears possible that France might be headed for its own George Floyd moment, where its racial injustices are finally reckoned with.
Africa Today.
A nearly three-decade-old ceasefire has ended in occupied Western Sahara, marking the onset of upcoming tensions in the region.
The opposing sides are the Moroccan military and the Polisario Front, the Sahrawi liberation movement that seeks independence from the monarchy.
The Polisario is mobilizing thousands of volunteers to join for the fight after the Moroccan military broke into Guédiarat, a restricted area technically under Polisario sovereignty.
Morocco has publicly and officially acknowledged the fact of launching an armed attack on a group of civilians demonstrating peacefully in Western Sahara.
I'm your host, Mubarak Kenya.
And I am Ikram Abdikarim. Welcome to Africa Today. In this episode, we take you to the Western Sahara, where open warfare appears to be on the horizon.
Now, fighting has reportedly broken out in several areas between the Moroccan military and the Polisario Front, and it could have impacts far beyond Morocco.
I have also prepared news from all over Africa for you. Stay with us for the next 25 minutes.
Tensions in Africa's last colony.
I say that our damnation comes from the natural resources we have here. If it wasn't for these natural resources, Morocco would never have invaded Western Sahara.
If we don't speak out, especially us as victims who have suffered all of this, if we don't speak out and defend our cause, this problem will remain.
Hostilities began after a Morocco-built road was reportedly blocked by the Polisario, and the kingdom's trade route with Mauritania was cut. Violation of the ceasefire after 29 years since it was clinched could undermine peace and security in the rest of the region. The ceasefire agreement was reached between the Polisario Front and Morocco after several engagements between 1989 and 1991.
We are sure, as we are sure that God exists, that the Saharan people's objective is independence. And that is a right we must address today, tomorrow, next year, in our time, in our children's time. It doesn't matter when. The important thing is to achieve national independence. The conditions we are living in, the weakness in policy and failures of the Moroccan kingdom, the importance of the Saharan case in the world today and the focus of Saharan people on independence are indicators that victory is imminent. Independence is imminent.
The kingdom has managed to occupy and administer 80% of the territory.
Since then, thousands have been tortured, imprisoned, killed, and disappeared while resisting the Moroccan occupation.
The media blockade Moroccans have imposed on Western Sahara is also quite infamous.
We are now joined by Mr. Sami Hamdi, Editor-in-Chief of the International Interest from London. Mr. Hamdi, thanks for joining us. Now, can you walk us through the latest round of violence in Western Sahara?
There is a road that goes from Morocco to Mauritania that is used for the transport of goods. There was a protest that took place from the inhabitants of the Western Sahara. The Moroccan government accused these groups of being part of the Polisario. It's not clear if they were. So they sent in the army, which fired warning shots. The Polisario say that the Moroccans actually fired on the protesters. And the Moroccans to that area, which is a buffer zone, and built a sand wall in order to try to prevent that road from being blocked again. The Moroccans believe that the Polisario are trying to force a new war. And the Polisario believe that the Moroccans are further cementing their de facto control of much of the territory.
Thanks for that, Sami Hamdi, Editor-in-Chief, the International Interest magazine.
Western Sahara has been occupied by Morocco since 1975 in defiance of the United Nations and the international community. Although the four-decade-old conflict has its roots in nearly a century of brutal colonization by Spain. Madrid agreed to hand over Western Sahara to Mauritania and Morocco in 1975, triggering tensions that continue to this day.
On the 21st of October, Polisario bring women and children and block the crossing point of Gargarat. Immediately, the Secretary General have been alerted by Morocco, and we alerted also the Security Council. And since 21st of July, of October, Secretary General made two calls to Polisario to withdraw from Gargarat, not to block civil and commercial traffic, and also not to change the statutes of this area.
Pro-independence Sahrawis living in the occupied territory stage more and more protest against the Moroccan rule established with the help of the United States.
Morocco reportedly took military action hours after U.S. Major General Andrew Rohling met with the commander of the Royal Moroccan Armed Forces Southern Zone.
We are now joined by Mr. Edward Corrigan, an international lawyer from Ontario, to hear his take on the significance of this meeting.
Well, obviously, the United States is supporter of the Kingdom of Morocco. Morocco is considered a conservative Arab government. It's under, you know, very, you know, quietly supported by the Americans. And obviously the American generals gave green light to Morocco to for any invasions or going into the buffer zone. So the Americans are definitely involved. Morocco has, you know, a history of a poor human rights record, not only in the old Spanish Sahara, but also in its own country. And there's some allegations that the Polisario Front also has some human rights problems.
Now, relations between the Moroccan and the U.S. militaries have grown in recent years, mostly thanks to cooperation over the American military command in Africa, AFRICOM.
Just recently, the United States and Morocco signed an accord that aims to strengthen military operations over the next decade.
Morocco hosts one of the largest training exercises organized by AFRICOM. It's called the African Lions Annual Exercise, where countries from all over Africa participate. It's usually held provocatively, I think, in southern Morocco, not too far from Western Sahara. So it certainly does. It's not good optics that Morocco chose to launch this military incursion in violation of the UN ceasefire on the same day that military commanders were in Morocco preparing for the annual African Lion Exercise.
Now, Washington is the monarchy's largest supplier of arms, and it hosts an annual U.S. military exercise called African Lion. Morocco signed a peace treaty with the U.S. in 1786, which is still in force today.
The Moroccan government also enjoys support from some U.S. region allies, such as Turkey and the UAE.
I think the U.S. has been trying to deploy as much as it can in terms of leverage in order to push other countries to normalize ties with Israel, whether that's by making promises of recognizing Moroccan control of the Western Sahara, or whether that's by making promises of incentives to push Morocco to assert what it believes is its right to the Western Sahara. This is all possible. However, it's not a guarantee that Morocco necessarily responded to these U.S. demands. The reality is that there were the road was blocked, there were protests. The Polisario have acknowledged that as well. It does affect transport of goods between Morocco and Mauritania.
The latest round of tensions in the rest of region could spiral out of control. Neighboring Algeria, which is home to Sahrawi refugees, could be dragged into the conflict, potentially causing an all-out war. Major weapon sales to Morocco by the Trump administration have even raised concerns, yielding a scenario which Morocco might be looking for a U.S. recognition of Western Sahara in exchange for Rabat's recognition of Israel. The U.S. even got close to recognizing Western Sahara as Moroccan territory under the George W. Bush administration. Meanwhile, the Sahrawi civilians remain the true victims, wary of empty promises by the UN Security Council and the UN Secretariat, and no resolution in sight.
This is all part of the mess that the Europeans created after in Africa, where they divided up the country in the 1984 Berlin Conference. But, you know, all of the countries and the lines and the map, you know, really don't correspond to the ethnic groups in the area and linguistic groups. So, you know, that's why there's so much instability in Africa, where these countries are, you know, trying to live under these artificial lines. And as I've read elsewhere, Africans just sort of ignore the lines. They just do whatever they want. So that's the issue. So until the Americans get serious and the European Union gets serious.
And now my colleague is ready to present you with news and events from across Africa. What do you have in store for us today, Kram?
Thank you, Henya. Welcome back to more news from all over Africa. And now, on to the first one. World's white giraffe has been fitted with a track device in Kenya to protect it from poachers, as one white female and her cow were killed by poachers in March. Its white appearance is due to leucism, which causes skin cells to have no pigmentation. Parliament approves deal for Rwanda Air to fly to five new routes. Rwanda ratified agreements with Brazil, Democratic Republic of Congo, Namibia, Somalia, and Tunisia, bringing the total number of BASA ratified by Parliament to 52. The country is also expected to sign agreements with South Korea and Malta. Thirdly, Burkina Faso election takes place amid terrorist threats. People have voted in Burkina Faso's presidential election, although polls are closed in parts of the north and east because of fears of terrorist violence. Now, clashes with police sparked by the arrest of Ugandan presidential candidate and former pop star Robert Chagulani, commonly known as Bobby Wine, has left at least 28 people dead since Wednesday. He was later charged with spreading coronavirus at a campaign rally. Police in Uganda have a right to shoot protesters dead if they reach a certain level of violence, Security Minister Eli Temwini has said. Also in West Africa, Nigerian photographer Obinna Obioma is using creative ways to display an iconic West African plastic bag to reflect on migration. Recognized around the world in either its blue-white and red-white varieties, this once nameless bag in West Africa has long been especially popular in markets across the region. Last but not least, Nigeria's economy slips into recession. Sixth Nigeria has slipped into recession, with the latest growth figures showing the economy's contracted 2.06% between April and June. The country has now seen two consecutive quarters of declining growth, the usual definition of recession. I hope you enjoyed the news. Don't forget to comment, and interactions are highly welcome. And stay tuned for more from me and the entire Africa team today. Thank you.
A full-blown military conflict in the disputed desert territory in northwest Africa could exacerbate the lives of locals already under pressure.
With a protracted war in Libya, long simmering insurgency in Mali, and an armed conflict in Ethiopia, hostilities in Western Sahara add to regional instability.
Now, the Polisario Front argues that the resumption of armed struggle is aimed at defending the legitimate rights of Sahrawis.
Frankly speaking, at the moment, it's very difficult to talk about any peaceful negotiations because Morocco has already launched a military attack on our land and our people, to which we have had to respond. So it all depends on how the developments on the ground. But if you just allow me very quickly to remind your viewers that the whole crisis started when Morocco launched an attack on a group of civilians who were protesting peacefully against Morocco's illegal occupation of Western Sahara, a violation that the United Nations...
The sparsely populated territory has worried international observers, who fear it could turn into a hub for terrorists. Natural resources are meanwhile being plundered from phosphates to fish.
Now, in order to isolate the southern part of the Western Sahara, Morocco also built a 2,700-kilometer sand wall in the 1980s, which is equipped with the barrier mine belt, thought to be the longest continuous minefield in the world.
I think there's always a risk of that, but I do think that there is little appetite on both sides for an all-out war. And I think the key reason for that is that Morocco has been able to access the Western Saharan area and been able to invest and take advantage of the area economically. I think Algeria is not in the mood to get engaged in a conflict, given that the president is ill, given that the country is going through transition, given that the regime is under significant pressure from its own domestic situation, whether that's corona, whether that's the popular protest. And Mauritania is engaged in a bitter political struggle, the third player in this, in a bitter political struggle between the former president and the current president.
Rabat seeks to secure passage of trucks to Mauritania via Gargara border crossing. Morocco has also played down the clashes occurred, asserting that the three-decade truce still stands. But does it? Morocco, on the other hand, says that its activities in Western Sahara are merely aimed at free circulation of civilian and commercial traffic with neighboring Mauritania.
This route is important when it comes to the movement of civilians and goods, and because such actions were a violation of the UN-sponsored ceasefire agreement, Morocco, in order to fulfill its duties, ordered its military forces to intervene and build a sand barrier to protect the area from any future breaches.
Morocco considers the resource-rich territory of Gurgurat as the integral part of the kingdom. Gurgurat is located on the southern coast of the disputed Western Sahara, along the road leading to Mauritania.
Morocco, because it's been able to develop and invest and take advantage of the Western Saharan area, irrespective of the ceasefire lines, and Algeria has been able to benefit because it's always been able to use the Western Sahara as a way to keep Morocco embroiled in separate issues instead of antagonizing Algeria from Algeria's perspective. So it may well be that what Polisario is doing is trying to flex its muscles in given that Algeria itself is looking at other military priorities. Almost as the Polisario is saying, Algeria, we're still here, so make sure you continue to support us.
The Gurgurat standoff exposes the vulnerability of Morocco's strategy of driving business growth as a major player in the sub-Saharan economy.
The latest round of violence also represents culmination of diplomatic failures to broker a sustainable peace deal to determine who controls Africa's last colony.
Now, after decades of disputes, Morocco's strategy appears to be refusing self-determination, and Polisario is rejecting Rabat's autonomy.
Power players in the region are also taking the chance to employ Western Sahara as a proxy for a wider struggle for influence in Northwest Africa. So, what repercussions can the conflict have for the region?
It depends if the regional countries are actually in favor of war. I think when it comes to analyzing the Polisario's propensity for war, or not propensity, if they have their desire for a renewed conflict, that all depends on the mood in Algeria, which is one of the prime backers of the Polisario, and the extent to which the Polisario believes that it will be able to secure international sympathy for its case, for its cause, for what's going on in the region. I do think that Morocco itself is not interested in a full-blown conflict. The reality is that both Morocco and Algeria, the two key international players in this conflict, are both happy with the status quo. Morocco, because it's been able to develop and invest and take advantage of the Western Saharan area.
Different generations of Sahrawis have grown up in refugee camps in Algeria, with no resolution surrounding their fate as the indigenous inhabitants of the region. Yet for Rabat, Western Sahara is a matter of national security, and King Mohammed IV has threatened to respond to any threat severely.
The journalists, observers, and activists who come from abroad are expelled. So what do? We break through this blockade from within. We are the witnesses. I'm going to suffer. If I do this work, I suffer more, yes. I'm going to make more sacrifices. But if I don't, I will always live under occupation.
Rabat appears to be entrenching the occupation by betting on time in what it portrays as an ongoing political process. The process, which had already failed, now looks way more distant as new clashes break out and hostilities increase.
That would be serious. And of course, Morocco, I think, is looking for, you know, seizing the resources of the area, and maybe, you know, oil, gas, other things. And while Morocco has control of the seaside, 80% of the territory, the Polisario Front controls 20% along the Algerian and Mauritanian border. But it is, yeah, most definitely could explode into something very serious. But, you know, we are talking about a, you know, there's only 60,000 people, 600,000 people that live in the area.
The United Nations has expressed grave concerns over the possible consequences of the conflict. The UN has also vowed to do its utmost to avoid the collapse of the 1991 ceasefire.
A UN mission known as MINURSO is also present on the scene, but will any of that be helpful?
The Secretary General remains committed to doing his utmost to avoid the collapse of the ceasefire that has been in place since 6 September 1991. And he is determined to do everything possible to remove all obstacles to the resumption of the political process.
Just recently, the UN Security Council decided to extend the mandate of the United Nations peace operation in Western Sahara for another year.
Delegates also called for a swift appointment of a new personal envoy of the UN Secretary General to push for the Western Sahara peace process. Now the new clashes are presenting a new challenge to the world body, stopping an all-out war.
It's, you know, a low-level conflict, but it could easily explode into something much more serious and possibly bring in, Algeria into the conflict as well as Morocco, and depending on what the Americans would do, but they've been supporting Morocco and have been consulting them and providing them arms. So, yeah, it could explode, but this conflict has been going on actually for many, many years, but since Spain withdrew in 1975, and Mauritania withdrew under pressure from the Polisario Front later. But it's not a densely populated area. There's a little over, not even 600,000 people in the area.
Thanks for that, Mr. Corrigan.
Today, Sahrawis have no reason to believe in the words of the UN, which promised a referendum in 1991, but has done nothing to make it actually happen. The native population is therefore fighting for freedom as more troops head to Moroccan positions along the separation wall.
I do think that the Polisario, which relies on international backing in order to stand up to Morocco, may find that international backing lacking in this current environment in which the region finds itself in, or in particular the current environment in which each of the individual countries find themselves in as a result of their domestic struggles.
According to some reports, the Moroccan military has shown weak performance in some instances, allowing Polisario forces to take over some positions easily.
As tensions soar, the Moroccan media has mostly remained silent as if nothing is happening.
This is why the Sahrawis' right to self-determination are being denied, a denial coupled with reports of heavy crackdown on protests. People are suffering, but the news never gets out.
That wraps it up for this edition of Africa Today. Thank you for watching the show.
And we pray for the end of violence and suffering all over the world. Until we come back again, it's goodbye from me, Mubarak Kenya.
And goodbye from me, Ikram Abdikarim, and the entire team.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.